Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Lowe, host of NBC's coverage of the Premier League. Welcome along to the latest edition of the Premier League on NBC podcast, where you can get the latest can't-miss content from NBC's coverage of one of the best leagues in the world. Plus, be sure to tune in on weekends at 7 a.m. Eastern for Premier League mornings on NBCSN. But for now, we hope you enjoy the latest edition of the Premier League on NBC podcast. Well, this Premier League weekend, week 26 of fixtures, is actually spread over two weekends. Four this weekend, six next weekend, because it is the winter break, officially known as the mid-season player break. That is how the next two weekends are looking. Two of the elder statesmen, I think it's fair to say, in the Premier League going head-to-head today. Roy Hodgson. Robbie, there have been rumours swirling around Selhurst Park over the last couple of weeks that actually, with his contract expiring at the end of the season, Hodgson was going to walk away and choose not to sign a new deal this summer. Yeah. He's been disappointed. He came out in the papers yesterday about the lack of signing, certainly in the January transfer window, if not the transfer windows before. From both Roy Hodgson's perspective and the clubs, who... It does now look like he might yet sign.
Yeah.
Do you think this relationship should continue?
I do, and I go back to the start of the relationship, Rebecca. Roy needed Palace when he come off a disappointing time as England manager, as much as Palace needed Roy. Some stability in staying in this league. Palace in the past have been a yo-yo team, innit? 72 years of age, Rebecca, it should be pipe slippers and the grandkids at the weekend. He's right in the heart of the Premier League, doing a capable job. He's a safe pair of hands. He keeps your team, I think, in the league. And go back to the start of Roy's tenure at the football club. Four losses under Frank de Boer goes out. Three losses straight away under Roy. Seven games with no points that same season. Not only does he keep them up, he keeps them 11th in the league with 44 points. This guy... I wouldn't say guarantees, but gives you a security, a safety that you don't get with a fresher, a newer model, a more contemporary, a shiny suit in the slim pants. Yes, that's the more contemporary manager, but I'm not sure that contemporary manager guarantees you a place in the Premier League.
Well, the mid-table mediocrity that Roy Hodgson has brought to Crystal Palace is what Palace fans have dreamt about, really, for generations, to be an established Premier League club. They're not, as I say, out of the woods just yet. From his perspective, though, he could be forgiven for surely thinking, you know what, I'm 72, I've not been backed financially, so I don't want to risk my legacy at Palace. Maybe the grandkids and the pipe is what I wanted.
You can forgive him for being in the neighbourhood and yelling at kids to slow down in their cars as they drive by. And, you know, we joke about his age, but you have to say it's remarkable. He's still performing at the level he's at with the commitment it takes to be a good football manager, especially in the modern day. I wonder, it's more about Palace and what they see in this relationship than Roy Hodgson. I just don't understand their plan and where they want to go forward. Yes, staying in the Premier League is important, but a lot of clubs not the size of Crystal Palace and not enjoying Premier League success have more ambition or going for... Yeah, younger managers that bring risk. I just think, what's the plan? Pardew and then Allardyce and then De Boer for no time and then Roy Hodgson. It's like... Some of these things don't match the other. So I'm fine with the plan if they say, listen, being boring at times, being defensive, staying in the Premier League is what we want to do.
But doesn't Roy give you the time, buy you the time? The safe hands, Rebecca, that I think almost guarantee you a place in the Premier League, doesn't that give you time to find the next guy and not rush into it this summer?
It's going to be a hard battle. It's 6 points clear at this point, so he's got a huge job to do.
He certainly has, with a difficult run coming up and no strikers, as we've talked about, or not many strikers, certainly, in form. Plenty going on around the Premier League since the shareholders' meeting, the owners of the club all getting together at the Premier League on Thursday. Just want to bring you a couple of points that came out of that meeting this morning. The 2020-2021 season, next season, will start. It's been announced over the weekend of August the 8th. The transfer window will now close on September the 1st, which will realign the Premier League with Europe's other major leagues, just like it used to be. But the last two seasons, you'll remember, it closed just before the beginning of the new season. And all the clubs have committed in the Premier League to introducing league-wide bans for anyone who are banned by their club for discriminatory, abusive or violent acts. Those are the headlines coming out of the shareholders' meeting on Thursday. Carl Martino, is something happening at long last at Everton?
Absolutely. And something already was happening when they had a high-profile manager like Ancelotti willing to take a project that, no disrespect to Everton whatsoever, that's beneath what his CV has been able to warrant when he's on the free market. There's still a transfer issue at this club. We will see if that can get fixed with the fact that now players that will be in the window this summer are watching Ancelotti at Everton with all the money behind Mashiri, with the stadium news that's great, all the buzz that we've had, but not a positive transition or an execution plan. Now, if they can continue this, sustain it to the end of the season, we might see a summer where Everton Football Club can reach that ambition.
Let's just go back to today, Rebecca, at the end of the game. Carlo Ancelotti shook the referee's hand. He wasn't happy. There were days in the past when if Everton got 3 points, the champagne was flowing. It was like a party. He knew there was a 15 or 20-minute spell in the second half where Palace scored and could have gone on and got themselves ahead. So the standards now, it's not just about the 3 points. He knows that you've got to control football games better than his team did today.
How much do you think he feels they are away from a team in his reflection?
12 months. Two windows. To the real Ancelotti team. We're seeing benefits of an experienced manager who knows what he's doing, who's getting a reaction from his players. But there's another level to go, and that's the level that's going to take them towards the top six and at the top end of the table. But that can come if he's given the right money and he's given time.
Well, and let's use Pep Guardiola as an example of it took Pep time to adjust to the Premier League. And he was given all the money he needed to go buy players and make a transition. And that also took place months in advance because he knew he was getting the job. So, you know, this is pretty quickly to look like the Everton they are right now.
Roy, you offered a lot more in that second half, but you still find yourself at the end of another defeat. What's your verdict?
Yeah, pretty much that. I thought that we didn't start as well as we'd have liked. I thought that we weren't anywhere near as aggressive as we were towards the end of the first half, and I thought we were playing a lot better, but of course we were 1-0 down. But I thought we started the second half very well, and when we equalised, it was a result of quite a lot of pressure that we had in the game. The second goal was the unfortunate one. I mean, it's a wonderful goal, of course. I mean, to run that far and still get the ball in the corner, that was the goal that won the game, really. The last one just sort of sealed it. But I still get a feeling that we've got a bit less than perhaps the team's performance deserved. But you get what you get, and it's 0 points and another defeat, which, of course, we're very unhappy about.
Let's look at the one positive aspect. Of course, you can see your delight when Benteke scores, and that long run without a goal is lifted from his shoulders.
Yep, that was very good. I mean, strange enough, you know, that was a goal which the goalkeeper could possibly have saved, and the one that he really should have no chance of saving, he produces a wonder save, and we hit the post in that situation as well. So I thought there was even when we went 2-1 down, I thought we showed a lot of initiative to get back in the game, and we were very, very close to getting that equaliser. But the longer the game goes on, of course, and you approach the end, every time the ball goes out of play, you lose valuable time. And there's quite a lot of free kicks the referee was giving, which was losing valuable time for us. And in the end, we just ran out of time to keep the sort of pressure up.
Injuries, Tompkins' injury, is that serious?
Could be. I mean, we won't know until, of course, it's fully assessed. But it's a hamstring injury, so I always fear when you get those, it's going to be weeks rather than days. But of course, we won't know until it's properly assessed.
Do you go into some sort of so-called winter break here? Is it a time to reassess the position, try to find a solution to this run?
Well, the solution, I think, is to make sure we play like we did for large periods of the game today, and as well as we did last week. So I don't necessarily fear the performances as such. I think the way we played, certainly these last two games, which we both lost, have been sufficient to give me some hope, if you like, or some belief that we're going to play well enough to get ourselves back on winning tracks. But unfortunately, you have to suffer the defeats, and you know, there's no amount of words are going to change anything.
Thank you, Roy.
My pleasure.
A couple of interesting words there from Roy Hodgson. Hope, Kyle, and belief. He still has it. Do you think Palace fans still have it?
I don't. I think they'll look at Benteke's miss as an example of, well, he scored today because Pickford had a shocker on that play. Probably could have trapped the ball. And if we don't have someone that can be consistent up top, what we're seeing is their threat in the attacking third means every game the margins are so tight where they're going to constantly be sort of chasing back into a game. And I just don't think that they're sharp enough in the attacking third simply because I don't think he sets them up that way. Now, you could say he doesn't have the personnel, but with Wilfried Zaha being anonymous through most of today, it has a lot to do with how they play rather than not having the ingredients.
So what should he do, do you think? In terms of setting them up better?
So in the second half, they started to come into the game for two reasons. One is, and Jim said it, they sat back a little bit. Everton switched their formation to 4-5-1, gave them a little bit more space, and added another attacking player, let their fullbacks go a little bit higher. It is a game of risk. And so, yeah, you can make sure you're not the one to make the errors. You can make sure you can capitalize on the other's side errors. But when you don't have a threatening goal scorer and you're where they are on the table, at some point, you have to take risks. And Crystal Palace have now wanted to be that team for so long, and they're still not.
Every season, Rebecca, Palace have their plunge. Sometimes it starts at the beginning of the season, a run with not many wins. Sometimes in the middle of the season, which we're getting now, it's a run with not many wins. 6 points above the relegation positions at the moment. The tactic that Roy has that's like defend, 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 give the ball to Wilf, he'll dribble past something to make happen, is not a tactic. It's not going to get them out of trouble. Three games coming up. Newcastle, Brighton, Watford. At the end of those games, we'll know whether Crystal Palace are in the fight to stay in this league or they're going to, again, get themselves mid-table and be safe and comfortable. Talk about contracts and all that's got to go on hold now. Crystal Palace need to concentrate on getting some points.
The Palace plunge.
The Palace plunge.
I like it, Robbie Earle. Now, since the sacking of Marco Silva, there is no doubt as to the upturn in Everton's season. Under Silva, 15 games, 9 defeats. Since he was fired, they've played 11 games, not all, of course, under Carlo Ancelotti because Duncan Ferguson was caretaker manager. But look at that. They've lost just one. They've gone from 18th to 7th, is the Italian.
Another victory, Carlo. I know. What do you make of the performance? You always ask for more. So what's your verdict?
The performance, yeah. The best thing today is the result. Performance was not so good. It was a difficult game. A lot of interruption in the game. A lot of throw-in. We were not able to keep high intensity in the game. But at the end, in the worst moment of us, Richarlison did a fantastic counter-attack, and we won for this reason. It's a great victory. For the fact that it's before the winter, before the break, I think that for us it's important to have a break and to prepare the next games.
And that's the strength you have, that finishing of Richarlison, the combination with Calvert-Lewin, that's working well.
Yeah, it's working well. We know that they have this kind of quality. Our Richarlison is a fantastic player in counter-attack. We use that situation really well. Dominic flicked the ball. Richarlison in counter-attack was absolutely outstanding.
And of course, that Walcott injury, that caused a problem, didn't it? It seemed to disrupt you for a little while, that first half.
Well, because honestly, in the squad, there is no player that can replace the skills, the ability of Walcott. Sometimes we have used in that position CBD that did well, but is more defensively. It has more defensive quality compared to Walcott. I hope that will not be serious injury, but we have to see tomorrow.
Are you going to tell him off not turning up with both socks, Sidibe? He seemed to have one sock and disappeared that time.
It's a new experience for me, also this.
New experience for us all. And in terms of European football now, there's no one in that chasing pack that you're amongst who's in the same form as you are. So is this a realistic target now? People are talking about Everton getting into Europe.
This is the target. I think that until I arrived, the team did a fantastic job, really well, really appreciate the effort that they did, everyone in the club. And now I think that we have a possibility to think about Europa League.
Thank you, Carlo.
Thank you.
So a point then for Brighton and a point for Watford. Robbie Earle, it's starting to get very worrying, this dropping points on a regular basis from winning positions for Watford, isn't it?
Absolutely, because Nigel Pearson, we talked about the new manager bump that came in. Last four games, they've got 1 point now, Rebecca. They've often done the hard bit, got themselves ahead, but then it becomes a mentality thing and it becomes a habit thing. You're winning in a game, but you don't believe you're going to see that out. And that's something Nigel's going to have to address. The next two games, Manchester United and Liverpool. So we're not sure how many points we're going to get from them, and they could be right in it if they're not careful.
That's a good point. Tough run for them to come. So take me into the position of a player then. As Robbie says, it becomes a habit. You go up and then you start to lose faith that you can see it out, and then that manifests itself in how does it do that, Carl?
Yeah, I think there's two different ways. One is not having the confidence that you could actually possess the ball and manage a game out. That's one way that you... Terrible giveaways or people not making angles to receive the ball. You don't want to be the person that gave it away this game and caused the drop points. Or it's you have defensive details that you just fall asleep on. And for a lot of the game, Watford were excellent. And I will give Brighton the credit that they did push the issue. They threw a different challenge at them. We're throwing a lot of numbers up top. The own goal was unlucky but forced in that they were falling back on their heels and they lost a bit of intensity. So I think it comes almost like a hoodoo where you're kind of waiting for the moment where something breaks down, and you just got to break it by going through a series of games where you don't have those lapses.
We take you back to the Amex, to Arlo and to Lee. We've been talking, gentlemen, the last 10 minutes since the end of the game, really about Watford's tendency now in recent games, this habit, as Robbie Earle called it, of leading and then dropping the points. They're both going to be concerned, these managers, but especially Pearson.
Well, it would appear so. 17 points dropped from winning positions. That's the third time in a row it's happened. In terms of the managers, who would be the happier given it ended 1-1?
Well, I think Graham Potter, certainly from being behind and looking like they were going to lose the 3 points to getting back into it, and also the fact that they're ahead in the league, so Watford haven't caught them up, I think he'll be the happier. Certainly with Pearson, he'll be looking at that like the boys have talked about in the studio and saying it is a thing, there's no doubt about it. We're making a thing of it, the press, because it's standing out on the list and you're going, wow, that can't keep happening. And I said to you in commentary, is it a fitness thing? It doesn't appear so. They seem like they're still putting the effort in. But it starts to become a mental thing. You start just dropping off that yard when you think, oh, let's protect something. And then people are talking about it after the game and they will be doing so until they stop that run. And that's cost them so far this season, even though they're still in it. And the fact that it's a draw is still tight as anything. Could go anyway.
Who's best equipped on the evidence of today to stay up?
Probably say Watford, because with Brighton, I just think that they're kind of running out of ideas, even though they played better in the second half. I think Watford.
Crystal Palace are right now in 14th and they are still 6 points above the bottom three. Robbie Earle, are they too good to go down, Palace?
No. They've played a game more than some teams in the bottom, Rebecca, so that gap could drop to 3 points. When you look at the goal scorer, Christian Benteke's got one Premier League goal. Calvert-Lewin's got 11, Richarlison's got 9. That's at the other end of the pitch. Haven't won a game since Boxing Day. Joint lowest scorers in the league. A tactic that looks like they defend for the first half of the game and then whenever they can, they give it to Wolf Zaha and let Wolf go on. That could get you in trouble. They're better players than that. They've got a good manager who can organise. But if they get into the mindset that we're too good, that we've got enough points, let me tell you, they could be down there.
From Everton's perspective, it's going so well under Carlo Ancelotti. Of course, he just wants to get to the end of the season where he can really regroup, he can reshuffle, bring some players in. How much does the name Carlo Ancelotti change the way Everton can recruit this summer?
Immediately. I mean, Carlo Ancelotti is a name that's associated with super clubs that win super trophies. And so I think when he goes to Everton, there might be agents typically behind every transaction, whether a player wants to go there or not, saying, well, maybe Ancelotti's kind of taking a step down. Maybe he's not with his game. And they'll see the project he's building. They'll know that there's an owner that's willing to spend money. They'll see that there's a side that has gaping holes in it in terms of the quality that Ancelotti typically gets to work with and the quality he needs in order to get to Europe. So I think players all over Europe are going to say, give Everton a call.
What Everton do have is a real manager, Rebecca. A guy who I've seen times when that win like today, people be popping champagne and going crazy at Everton. Hear what he said about the performance, not good enough. They're going to play better teams than Palace, who will hurt them in those 20-minute spells when they don't play. This is what I always call the gaffer, a guy who takes hold of the football club, who sets the standards and wants to win. And those who don't want to go with him, they'll be out the door.
Graham, the cold statistic says it was an own goal that got you the point. I think that's a little bit harsh, though, because second half in particular, you pushed.
Yeah, we did. Gave a lot in the game. Difficult to go behind when I think we started the game quite well and was on the ascendancy a little bit, pushing them back. I have to look at again at the goal, but I felt there was a great strike, but it wasn't from too much. And then we have to play a role in the game because we're 1-0 down. The crowd gets a little nervous and the atmosphere is difficult. So that's why I'm more pleased with the players and more proud of the players, because we took the responsibility of the game and pushed in the second half and deserved the goal, I think.
For their goal, Ducouré covered a lot of ground in the run. Could more of your players squeezed across, covered up, protected the centre of your defence?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things we have to look at in any goal. I think you can always do something better. Like I said, there was a turnover. We actually did quite well, got out. Aaron Moy was breaking the lines and we're looking to play him behind them, ricochets to them, and he's got quality and physicality and it's a great strike. But of course, every goal I think is one of those you want to try and do better with.
After that goal, the Amets probably got a nervier place than I've ever witnessed it. It was very, very nervy, very anxious. Can't do the players the world of good that.
No, it's not easy, and that's why I'm more proud of the players, the character they show, the responsibility they show, that they accepted the challenge, because you could go under at that point. And again, with Watford's transition players and quality, it's not easy to be the one that's got to try and find the answers, especially when teams defend deep. But we did. I thought we pushed and pushed, showed courage, showed bravery and quality, and Adam Moy had a good chance just before we scored. And it's an own goal, but it's another good attack.
It was all in front of your goal in the second half. Are you happy to come away with this with something?
Obviously, the way that, you know, the goal went in against us, very disappointing. But, you know, Maps is just trying his best. He isn't trying to score an own goal, even though
he could have jumped out of the way of it, you know.
I don't think he's trying to put it in the back of the net. But, you know, that's football sometimes. It goes against you. But fair play to the lads, you know, the back four, the back sort of eight at times. They threw it all at us today and they stood strong for a lot of it.
Let's turn to you. And after we spoke pre-game about that misfortune early season, the own goal, you scored a beauty today. What are your recollections of it?
Yeah, of course. I think, like I said in the previous interview, I scored own goal in the first game of the season. And I want to score today to help the team. Today, you are a little bit disappointed about the result, but we carry on and we fight until the end.
This position that you're playing in at the moment, does it suit you better?
Yeah, I think so, because I score more goals and I help better, I think, the team. But the most important is the team, is the way I play, is the way I help my teammates. And today Ben make a great save as well. So everyone make good thing today. Unlucky we concede a goal, but it's good for the next game.
Both Brighton and Watford have 12 games left to play. Of course, Watford are still in that bottom three, Kyle. Brighton are out of it for now. Who are you most worried about?
I think I'm most worried about Brighton.
Despite the fact they're out of the bottom three?
Yeah, I am. I think eventually, if I give on paper quality, I think I lean it to Watford. I think that Pearson actually is hard done by and that he has turned things around a little bit. And, you know, minor details with own goals has been Burnham, especially last three games. I think Brighton's the way they play is just taken a little bit long to set in. And I think there's just this reluctance to shift from it. And they might run out of time. I mean, they're going to start to feel comfortable here. And they're kind of hitting that ground where it's a false comfort that you have, especially when you haven't really put together a serious run. And they've got a tough run, too, just like Watford right now.
That false comfort, you called it in the pregame match this morning, back at 7 o'clock, the Brighton bubble. You're concerned about almost that complacency.
Yeah, they get a bit insular. That we talk about what Graham Potter's doing and all the processes at the football club, and you look at possession, they always have a good bit of possession. But, Rebecca, they're not getting enough points. One win in 11 Premier League games. You said there's 12 more to go. That might mean two more wins at this current rate. They've got to find a way to be more desperate, to bare their souls and play a different way that isn't always as pleasing on the eye, but get the results.
Bad news, I'm afraid. Storm Ciara has hit Britain hard this morning, and as a result, they've had to postpone the game between Manchester City and West Ham, which was due to kick off at 11:30 a.m. Eastern. Now, this rarely happens in the top level of English football when weather becomes the defining issue. But on grounds of safety, as you can see here from this map, it's bad. This is the decision that has been made. And Manchester City have made a statement in the last 45 minutes. Due to extreme and escalating weather conditions and the interests of supporter and staff safety, today's match has been postponed. This decision has been made by Manchester City's safety officer following consultation with club stakeholders and officials at West Ham. Further information regarding the rescheduling of today's match will be published in due course. So once again, if you're just waking up a little bleary-eyed, it's true, I'm afraid. Manchester City against West Ham has been postponed. Robbie, I'll start with you. The postponement of City against West Ham. Disappointing, of course, on the day for not only the players and the staff, but the fans who are looking forward to it. And us, of course, here on NBCSN. But how will it affect both these teams' schedule going through, going forward, having to reschedule this game now?
Not helpful. From West Ham's point of view, Rebecca, I would probably look at this game. Chance to get some points and get out the bottom three. With a storm and with the conditions, might actually be a leveller. Might actually help us. Man City might not be able to play their football just as much as they'd like. And there's a narrative around City at the moment that they're not converting chances, things aren't going so well. So from West Ham's point of view, I think I'd want this game to be played and I'd want to get the points. It's not the kind of game I'm going to look forward to in the future thing. We've got a game in hand away at Manchester City. That doesn't give you that much positive thoughts about getting points.
From Manchester City's perspective, Kyle, they've got the Champions League, they've got the League Cup final coming up, still in the FA Cup as well. The last thing they need is a midweek rearranged game at some point in at who knows when at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they won't see this silver lining, but the fact that they are nowhere near the title, they can play players that they haven't been playing. And I guess that's a bigger question we'll get onto when we talk about Manchester City later. They have the depth to be able to handle a Premier League game thrown into the schedule. It is the cup competitions that are going to take priority. So I don't know if it'll affect them nearly as much as West Ham, who desperately need the point. I mean, poor West Ham, and they live in a storm. And here they are having their schedule changed. I mean, this wasn't a game they probably expected to pick up points anyway, but you kind of wanted to get it passed and stay on the rhythm of playing games.
From Man City's point of view, Rebecca, I think it's quite important. And you make the point about congestive sort of second half of the season with the three competitions that have now become real focus with the title gone. I'm thinking about the narrative around the football club at the moment. Today, to go out and beat West Ham 4-5 changes that a little bit. That, you know, they're not losing their edge. They can convert the chances. You know, there's a little bit of a negativity around the football club at the moment, and playing West Ham at home and getting a good win would help to address that.
Yeah, in your career, when you have a bad game or in a bad moment, you want to play as soon as possible. Yeah. I mean, lingering and waiting for the next game is the worst thing.
But if you hinted at it there, if you're Man City, playing in a storm, playing in these kind of conditions, is that conducive to beating West Ham 4-5-0?
Well, you'd think it doesn't help their game, the way they like to play. You know,
without a storm, I guess if I'm Man City, the one positive I would say is that Raheem Sterling gets an extra week or so, might get him back. And the Laporte we're hearing is training, but not quite at full match fitness. Again, that gives them a little bit of time to get those players.
I mean, I didn't think rain. I mean, you got England.
No,
I think you guys can't.
Trust me, Carl. This is another level.
It's obviously the right.
Has it ever happened to you? I mean, either the build-up when you're a player, you spend all week planning for a huge game, and there are not many Premier League games over the course of the season. Only 38. So, how do you feel as a player when you're absolutely ready to go, and then it's called off?
That I have way too many carbs in my body at this point. I hated night games. I mean, where you had to wait all day long. I mean, this is even worse, where you get all geared up, you're ready to go, you're in that mental space. It's kind of hard to unwind out of that sometimes.
There's a special feeling, Rebecca, before you play a Premier League game, that's a bit of nerves and excitement and can't wait for the show to go. And when you get told a game's off, it's like somebody switches that off and everything goes dead inside you. And it's like, you just can't have that moment back again. And that's what will happen to these players.
And for planning-wise, they'd probably get into their bubble at the training site and go, now you're in a training session when you were set for a game plan. It's just, it's rare. It's rare that it happens.
You got a feel for the West Ham fans as well.
Yeah,
they've travelled up from East London this morning at the crack of dawn.
Absolutely.
And now they are literally coming off the motorway, turning around and driving back again. Indeed. And it's also not fun as well, driving in these conditions. They're not playing today, so they're going to have a game in hand. They're playing the League Cup final in a couple of weeks' time. They're going to have another game in hand. They're going to have two extra games to fit in it somewhere across the season, Manchester City. After the game last weekend when they lost at Spurs, all the reports in the papers were that the players were saying to Pep, you're rotating too much, you're tinkering too much. Whether or not those reports are correct, the fact that the optics are there's unrest in the dressing room is damaging, is it not?
I kind of have a different take on it. I understand how it seems like airing dirty laundry or people have disagreements with Pep, but the context is Pep always invites this. He asks, and I think the Amazon documentary gave us a little light into this. And I don't know how you felt, but as a player, you love the floor because a lot of times this happens when the manager's not there. It's the manager comes in, yells, goes into the other room, and then we say, I can't believe he's changing the team so much. You know, you can't do this. So I think it's a really healthy thing that Pep has always invited this, and I think these conversations have happened in the past, but things were going well and they didn't come out. But I do see your point in that it's just another thing on them right now.
I'll just break a myth. These conversations happen once a season, every club, all over the league, Rebecca. And managers sit down, sometimes they listen to players, you allow to give it an opinion. Often managers listen, nod, and do what they're going to do anyway. But just because it happened doesn't necessarily mean it's a terrible thing, but Pep's the alpha male. He will walk out of that dressing room still in charge of that football club. So there's not too much going on wrong there.
Let's focus on some notes that came out of the shareholders meeting at the Premier League. That's all the owners of the Premier League clubs getting together. It happens regular occasions throughout the season. The new season will start over the weekend of August the 8th. That's 2020-2021. The transfer window will now close in the summer on September the 1st. So clubs will have a good few weeks of the season before they have to finish all of their business. And importantly, that now realigns with Europe's other major leagues. We'll talk about that in just a moment. And also clubs have said that they are committed to introducing league-wide bans for anyone banned by their club for discriminatory, abusive or violent acts. We're also going to talk about the winter break. Of course, we are in it right now. But for the boot room this morning, we're going to start by talking about this new date for the summer transfer window. Well, Kyle, I say new date. It's not actually a new date. It's
a new old
always,
date.
A new old date, indeed. For the last two seasons, they decided to change it, to have it the night before the season started, which I think caused everyone a lot of problems. Now they've realigned themselves once more with Europe because the point was that Europe didn't come and meet the Premier League and also bring it the night before, which allowed players to still be bought and sold to European clubs so players could still leave clubs, but they couldn't buy anybody, English clubs. That was the point. So what do you make of whether this is now the right choice by Premier League clubs to revert back to end of August, beginning of September?
Well, I think it shows a maturity and a security from the Premier League to say it didn't work. I'm surprised. I guess maybe I'm not surprised it didn't. I was hopeful it was going to work and that it's the right call to say it's a distraction to the beginning of the season, to have players that are, you're as a fan, buying a jersey of that might be at a different club and you just bought the new kit. I've been in teams where it's a bit uncertain if people are going to be there to start a season or a month later or gone. And it's just... we were hopeful, I think, people that believed in this rule, that the rest of Europe would have said, okay, well, the Premier Leagues are the biggest buyers out there. They move markets. If they're going to make this big stance, we got to go their way. But I think the rest of Europe said, no, stay strong, and these guys will change, and they did.
What do you think, Robert?
Premier League clubs hurt themselves, Rebecca. Manchester United were a great example. Remember, Lukaku went on the transfer deadline last day, so... they couldn't do any business then. Alexis Sanchez left after the window had closed in England but was open in Europe. They couldn't do any business then. Those are the key situations where Premier League clubs were hamstringing themselves, were hurting themselves. And aligning now with the rest of Europe makes so much more common sense. And just quickly from a point of view, if you're... Crystal Palace started the season, lost four games. At least now, if you lose four games and you think, I need an emergency, you can do that in that period. But, or if somebody gets injured, you can replace them.
But the unsettling nature that Carl talked about, I remember talking a lot about this. I mean, in a perfect world, would you have it the night before the season with the entire European
league? If everybody in Europe came with me. But if everybody in Europe can still do business and I'm the only one who's short, Rebecca, I don't want my players to be able to leave me over a 20 day period.
I think it hurts young players too, because sometimes those injuries at the beginning of the year are an opportunity that pops up for a young player. And if you could just go to the market and buy the replacement or ship a guy out, you know, I do think that's sort of a byproduct of why the Premier League wanted to start the season and say, what we've got is what you got to play with.
Okay, so maybe not yet in a perfect world, but trying to certainly realign. Yeah. In terms of the winter break, here we are, right in the middle of it, and, and ironically, or maybe not so much, a storm has actually caused the postponement of a game today. Next weekend, there are going to be six games, so again, a reduced schedule list. Yeah. The criticism of it so far, and we're only halfway through, is that it's come too late because we have seen many injuries over the past 3 weeks to lots of players that arguably, if there'd been a winter break, maybe hadn't, may not have happened.
Yeah.
In other clubs, other leagues around the world, winter break is earlier. What do you think?
That it's a step in the right direction. I think a little bit like VAR, the winter break is going to need tweaking. Might be a season or two before we get to what is a real winter break where the whole thing shuts down and everybody gets a two-week break. But I think we shouldn't be too negative on this one. I think it's something that's needed. I was in the past a little bit like, well, we didn't used to have one in my day and let's keep playing. But you see the intensity of the game now, Rebecca, the speed of the game, the injuries to top-class players because of the constant play and the level of the football is something that the Premier League have to look at seriously and I think have to in the next year or two put something in there where everything will shut down.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's strange that some have a break, some don't, and it's at different times. I mean, that's kind of...
Well, they all have a break. Yeah. It's just but like you
staggered,
say, it's a staggered
but
break.
The break either helps you more than it does someone else based on the timing of when you get your break. So that seems a competitive disadvantage and a bit arbitrary. I know why they have to do it. For me, I'm going to leave my players' union real quick to say it's a business, and it's an amazing thing when a lot of other leagues go dark, and there isn't a lot of great football on television to be around with your family, to be around during holiday periods, and have all of these incredible games coming at you. So,
But we're getting games that are 70% of what they could be because the intensity goes down.
Are they?
Some of the star players aren't playing. Harry Kane isn't playing. You want to go watch Tottenham. If you're an American fan, you want to go to watch Spurs, and Harry Kane isn't playing. Or Raheem Sterling's not playing for Manchester City. You're not getting the true 100% real top-edge Premier League games.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the opportunity cost of how damaging is it when you start adding minutes to players. And listen, I mean, with all the cup competitions and World Cups in the summers, and I mean, the minutes are getting kind of crazy in what you're demanding of players that now in the modern game is even somehow more physical and more demanding than it used to be. And I guess science then catches up to try to help players recover quickly. So, I don't know. I want to watch great games and I want to watch great players. So it's like that's the catch-22 is that if we're not going to see the players we want to see during the fixtures that are on because it's too many games, they don't get a break. That's a bad thing.
I'm for winter sun. Let's get a bit of sun on your back.
A bit of winter sun because, I mean, the timing of it, Carl, right now, we're two-thirds of the way through the season. This isn't midway.
I remember the break, were like everyone else, would have been a lot earlier. I'm arguing based on an actual winter break like the rest of the world. That's what you were saying.
Just back in the day, so Alex Ferguson, and you look back at the records, used to send his players off. I remember Ronaldo doing it. I remember Giggs doing it. I remember Scholes at one time and Andy Cole. Every now and then during the season, he'd say, off you go for a week. He'd almost have his own break where he'd say, you've had too much football, you've been playing a lot of games, you're a young player still developing. He would make sure he looks after his talent.
And Liverpool did that with Sterling a few seasons back, I remember.
That's true. And there is one thing to be said that Chris Wilder, in fact, said it this week. The fans who keep the league running, they do not want a winter break. Yeah. That is just one thing to bear in mind. Trust us, fans, we don't want winter break. We want as much football as possible. Let's talk, though, about Sheffield United's victory. We will show you a rare chance of seeing Chris Wilder sort of lose himself a little bit on the side of the field. We'll show that to you in the highlights shortly. But they're up to fifth in the league with 12 games to go. You cannot say they're not in this Champions League race.
It's remarkable, Rebecca. If we'd have said before a ball was kicked, 26 games will be played, one of these teams will be fifth and one will be 16th, we'd go, oh, Bournemouth must have had a really good season. Mm. We never expected Sheffield United. I think everybody to a man thought that Sheffield United would be vying down at the bottom of the league and do well to stay in there. To be sitting where they're sitting. Quickly, I just want to say, it's not just about spirit and character and hard work and all the things. They're technically very good and tactically very well set up, and Chris Wilder has to take a lot of credit for that.
There is definitely a school of thought in the United Kingdom where an English manager, very earthy man like Chris Wilder, is only seen as someone who can produce teams with spirit, as Robbie said. But this manager, Wilder, he has got so much more than just that.
And if you were to, you know, it's funny, we've got this old cliche of the Pepsi challenge. You know, if you didn't know what you were actually looking at, if you didn't know it was Chris Wilder and you just watched this team, you'd think, is a Spanish manager? I mean, is it, you know, Italian? What, I mean, what is this? The ideas are brilliant. We'll see if he wants the Spurs job or whatever when it comes up. And so it's going to be another example of, if he doesn't get his credit now, if he's not linked with these big jobs, well, it's just not going to happen, and it's people being stereotypical about British managers, because watching his team play is the most impressive part about where they are. I was desperately going through my emails trying to see, did I have them in the relegation zone, which I'm sure our wonderful research team is going to say, Kyle, I think you did. And it's just the style of play. And also, take Fulham. They wanted to come into the league and play out of the back and stuff, but they made the mistake of just redoing the whole team and buying a bunch of new players. This shows you what you can do, where you give some players that little bit of extra push, saying, are you capable of the next level?
And you can buy a Sander Berger, and he can not have a great game. Yeah, and on can come Lundstrom, who
if they can keep
should be playing, and he wins the game. Yeah, absolutely. That does it for this edition of the Premier League on NBC Podcast. Be sure to check out other episodes where you'll get a collection of our most spirited in-studio debates, as well as exclusive on-site access. Plus, don't miss out on Premier League mornings on weekends at 7 a.m. Eastern on NBCSN. I'm Rebecca Lowe. Bye for now.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.